Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I'm talking with Hamilton, Ontario-based illustrator Jackie Oakley. Jackie has worked with clients like the New York Times, Rolling Stone, National Geographic, and Amazon. We talk about growing up in Bahrain, England, Zambia, and Libya, how she got started shortly after college in an illustrative collective, defining and evolving your style, collaborating with her husband, designer and illustrator Jamie Lawson, on a sci-fi gallery exhibition, and more, all right after this. Jack Prince is one of our favorite companies to work with. They offer great products at even better prices, with some of the best customer service I've ever seen. Why not pick Jack Prince next time you need t-shirts, business cards, stickers, or flyers printed? Right now, Jack Prince is offering 4-day turnaround on their most popular apparel products. That's 4 days with no rush fees, no hassle, and no BS. With apparel from popular brands like American Apparel, Next Level, Gildan, All Style, and more, starting as low as $3.99 each. Now is the time to take advantage of this great offer. Visit jack.inc/4days to order your apparel today. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 20% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. So, you know, I first learned about you, I think, when you spoke at Creative South back in 2014.
Yeah.
Which was actually my first year of going to Creative South and kind of getting out of my very isolated bubble of, you know, only knowing the giant names in design like, you know, Saul Bass and Paul Rand, who were already probably dead at that point.
Yeah, and you don't think I'm one of those guys? How dare you?
Well, no, I've shoved my foot in my mouth, so we're off to a good start. I'm excited to finally talk with you and hopefully not put my foot in my mouth.
Yeah, no problem. No, it was great. I always like going to the design conferences too, because I'm kind of usually in the world of illustration, which is... Mm-hmm. Kind of like it does blend and cross over more and more now, but it is really nice hearing this different perspective too.
Yeah.
And so it's nice for a change, definitely.
Cool. So why don't we start off in the earlier years? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in a few different places. Actually, my parents are English.
Uh-huh. And they moved to Canada. You've got a bit of that in your accent.
A little bit. Although they think, when I go back to England, they think I sound like a Yank. I don't think they actually know what the term yank means, but there you go.
It depends on where you live what it means.
Yeah, probably. I was born in Canada, and then after a couple months we left, and my dad was an engineer and just found jobs overseas. So I grew up in, first we went to Zambia, Libya, and then Zambia, and then to England a little bit when my brother and sister were born. Mm-hmm. Which was a surprise twins that came in, which my mom didn't know she was having until she was actually in the hospital.
Oh, wow. I have twin 8-year-olds.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I can't imagine.
I don't know any different. So it's what it is for me.
Yeah. I'm sure. So they had to phone my dad up in Zambia at the time and tell him, like, he's like, what do we have? He's like, oh, you actually have a boy and a girl extra. So that was a nice shock.
I'm going to assume he probably dropped the phone and was silent for a few minutes.
Yeah, he's like, what to do with this information? Then we went back to, we stayed in England for a little bit. And then I mainly grew up in Bahrain, which is a tiny little island country that not a lot of people know about. It's in the Persian Gulf, really close to Saudi Arabia, and actually has a causeway that connects the islands with Saudi Arabia.
Ah, so it's got a nice bridge that you go over to.
Yeah, yeah. And Bahrain is one of the countries where you can actually drink. So people tend to come over sometimes.
one of the liberal nations in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we were there for 7-8 years, and I came here when I was a teenager back to Canada.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's it. But back and forth to England a lot on holidays. Mm-hmm. Each summer you kind of had to leave the country, else you would boil.
Yeah, so. I can imagine.
Yeah, so that was my upbringing, which seems kind of like a different life now because I've been here for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what was that experience like growing up? I moved around a lot as a kid, but I stayed in the States. I went from Minnesota to Florida to Kentucky to Georgia to Alabama. It's very different than moving from, Canada to the Middle East to, Libya. Like you said, especially at that time, I'm assuming this is the 80s.
Yeah, it was like the
Libya
early 80s.
Libya wasn't exactly the most peaceful place at that point.
I don't think they did their research before going. They didn't stay in Libya very long. They're like,
well, that's
not...
probably a smart decision. It was, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely have some stories about there. But
yeah, Gaddafi wasn't the nicest of guys.
Yeah, it's like on the cusp of things. But yeah, it was kind of, when you're a kid, you just get used to what your home is. So, I remember going to England for holidays and thinking England was really exotic because it had like green grass and it rained and we could wear rain jackets and Wellington boots and play in puddles and things like that were super fun. And coming back home, that was just my home at the time. So that was what I was used to. But yeah, coming to Canada, I was so, so excited about it because we got to see, we had never seen snow before. There were movie theaters and malls and all these things that we didn't have. So
sure.
Yeah, it was definitely a culture shock. I think it wasn't a great time to move when you're just like a preteen and you're feeling
when the hormones are raging and you don't know how to control your emotions.
I have a 3-year-old. I think it starts really early though. I think we're
it
into
does.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
And they go through phases. So he'll calm down in about a year or so, and then around seven or eight
I'm holding
it picks
you
up again.
To that.
At least that's been my
you in a year, like when is this gonna stop?
That's been my experience. By the time he's hitting 4, he'll calm down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It'll level out until he's 7, 8, and then you'll start getting some preteen attitude.
Oh,
and,
nice.
And I can't speak past that because mine haven't gotten past that point.
Something to look forward to.
There's a lot more eye rolls than there used to be. I know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Odd. But, yeah, like that time... it was super fun going to a different place and having more options because I was used to living in such a small country. But it was really different. And even the kids, like we didn't grow up having like MTV or we only had like 2 channels that were constantly stopped for prayer intermission. So you didn't really get a lot except I think we got like Voltron and we actually got G.I. Joe. So that was what I knew about America.
There you go.
There you go. Actually, I didn't know any Americans because on all of the expats who lived in Bahrain, like any English speakers went to this one school at the time. Mm-hmm. And then all the Americans were part of an army base there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really, really exotic. We had one day where we had an American boy come into the class. We're like, oh, he's American. We didn't really quite know what that was. We're like, he's American. It's so
the
exciting.
Exotic American.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. but yeah, coming to Canada, it just felt like kids were a lot more grown up. Like they just wanted to be more grown up, and I still felt like a kid, and I was quite a quiet, shy child. So people thought I was cute and adorable and wanted me to talk all the time, which is totally not what you want when you just want to blend in totally. But yeah, I got used to it pretty quickly.
Gotcha. When you were growing up, were you big into art at that time? Did you, you know, kind of start off drawing all the time, or were you
more interested
in other things?
I always drew. I liked other things too. I was a pretty sporty kid, which you probably wouldn't know now because I just sit like a lump at my desk all the time. But I liked football, soccer a lot. And but I always drew, and my parents were really good at just encouraging me with that and getting me art classes. And and then I would go, when we would go to England, I'd sketch from a lot of nature books. I think I was really just excited by animals and flowers because it was so different than where I was living, which you just saw camels and goats all the time and geckos. So that was just different. And I was kind of just looked through those a lot and copied those. So I never had comic books. I wish I had grown up with comic books because we didn't really have those around, but that's what I found later. As a teenager.
Well, you have a 3-year-old boy now. Pretty soon, Marvel is going to be his complete obsession.
Oh, that has started.
If it hasn't already started.
That started at like one. Yeah. No, definitely. He has like different superhero shirts, and we've got to make sure we get the right one on him each day. Uh-huh. So we have a huge tantrum. It's really fun.
Yeah, that doesn't change. You'll just end up adding in Minecraft and stuff like that,
though. Yeah, he does occasionally refer to me as Wonder Woman, so that's pretty good.
That's pretty cool.
He gets his DC and Marvel mixed up. We'll have to kind of correct him a bit later. But
you know, it's good to have exposure to both camps.
Yeah. I always did art. I did like a little bit of watercolor. I actually did. I remember I went to a friend's house the other day and they had all these paint by numbers, and I totally forgot that I spent ages doing oil like paint by numbers. And
I swear
I learned how to paint from that. Like how to break down colors and tones and definitely.
I'm going to have to give that a try because I started off as a painting major in college and quickly realized that I was not good at technique. Mm. You know, form was fine. Technique, not so great.
It takes a while. I cheat a lot, too. I don't know how to properly do anything. But
yeah. Well, now I realize that that's not necessarily that important. You know, as long as you can accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, definitely.
But when you're in college and your professor is telling you you're doing it wrong, that gets rather discouraging.
Yeah, especially at that age where you're really excited by it, but you're also new and you're figuring out a million other things at the time too, right? It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, definitely is. So when you're going through school, did you go to college? I gotta ask.
Yeah, I did. I did art throughout high school, and then I went to university.
Okay.
For 1 year, but didn't really like the program and dropped out. And I'd gone to visit my friend at this art college called Sheridan. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of renowned for art and animation, actually, at the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of Disney people came from there.
They're still pretty well known for animation.
Yeah, they're like the illustration and animation people are like arch rivals in the school, at least used to be. There used to be these amazing like Halloweens where people would get dressed up and try to outdo each other.
Oh,
there's
nice.
Some really amazing costumes there. But yeah, so I went to visit him and I just found like the life drawings were really good and the work was really interesting and everyone was doing something different. Like people had totally different voices and different styles and that was encouraged. So I went into there not really knowing what illustration was as a career, but just wanting to do artwork. And I was really lucky to be part of a year where all the students around me, there was such talent. And that really helped to push me forward because I didn't want to be embarrassed when I was crits in class. So. It's a really good motivator.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
It helps you learn things. So as you're going through and kind of figuring out what you want to do, how did you decide that illustration was the route for you?
I really liked, again, that you could experiment and find your own voice within it. At the time, there was like people do mainly a lot of digital stuff, which is totally great. But at the time, there's people doing collage and painting and printmaking and There's so much variation out there, so that was exciting. And I liked having something to work with, like having an assignment where you get an article that is super fresh, no one else has read it yet, and you have to work with what the new news that's happening in the world or something interesting culturally, and find like how you would communicate that idea in the strongest way possible to an audience. So it felt like this really interesting way to do art, that you're actually connecting with the general public and not just having art in art galleries.
Sure.
Which I also like doing art too, but I like that.
As I see all the paintings behind
you. Yeah. I like the combo of both, definitely. And I do really like that it changes all the time too. So you can get 1 week, you can get a phone call about an editorial job, and usually they're really quick. They're done in a few days. And then you can be doing a book cover at the same time, or you could be asked to do a mural or some packaging. So that variation is really interesting to me, so I don't get bored, and that you have to think about how you would particularly solve this, both conceptually and visually.
Sure.
So, which drives you crazy too, but it's also what's good about it.
Granted, I am not an illustrator. My illustration skills are very basic. But just as a designer, that same thing occurs.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes you're like, yeah, I do not want to problem solve this at all anymore. But other times it's a really interesting challenge. And it also kind of forces you out of the box that you're used to, and gets you to do something different. And sometimes with art direction too, you complain about art direction or someone saying, oh, you should move this here or there, add this. And like, I don't know, that's a terrible idea. Absolutely. And then you do it, and it ends up being something really different that you would never have done before. And then you use that for other projects in the future. So that's what's kind of fascinating about it. Right. Yeah.
Sorry about the disappearing act there. I forgot to unplug my fridge and it kicked on. I'm going to leave this in too, just so people see the behind the scenes. So, you know, I want to get to more career stuff, and we'll dive a little deeper in depth, but as you're going through school and when you get out of school, what's kind of your first gig? Are you, in-house somewhere? Are you freelancing right out the gate? How does that work?
My first gig was a terrible waitressing job.
That doesn't count. Your first gig in the industry.
In the industry. But that waitressing job led to my first gig.
Oh, well, in that case, let's go back to that. Yeah. Okay.
I moved. Sheridan's in Oakville, which is kind of the suburbs outside of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Toronto. And yeah, at the time, like now there's kind of a lot of different options for illustrators, but at the time you kind of went into it being like, I'm definitely a freelancer and that's what I'm going to do.
Sure.
And so you're just sending out, it was a really good idea to be part of this collective of a few different illustrators at the time. And we pooled our resources and got a mailing list together.
Oh,
and
that's then a good idea.
Yeah. Under like a group name. And then we would split the cost about postcards, and we'd spend like a night putting stamps on things together. And then we'd also do art shows together. So even when you weren't getting work, it was a way to keep you motivated and to have deadlines. So you'll have a show coming up or you have to have a postcard done. So you'd have to do a piece for that. But it was also a great way to, kind of see when someone got a job, you'd be like, oh, it's possible. You can actually get work. That's great. Mm-hmm. Even though you'd be like, oh, bastard. The new work and I'm not getting work. But you also have people to commiserate against too, right?
Sure.
So that was great. So I was with that collective, just trying to kind of get meetings with people. Mm-hmm. And we'd also go to New York together with a few of them and get meetings with art directors and show our portfolios around. And then it's hard. Like I said, I tend to be more of a shy person, so it's hard kind of showing off your work. I think maybe too, if you're like English background, you're not supposed to kind of brag about.
Talk about yourself.
Yeah. So it's like you've got parts of you fighting against each other all the time. But Yeah, there was some private party, and I found out that someone was a designer there, and I started talking to her, and I just asked, like, kind of swallowed my pride and said, could you look up my work sometime? And and she gave me a meeting, and that was kind of like the first meeting in person I had before I really went for it. And she was really supportive, and then actually got me a job doing audiobook covers for the Shaw Festival, which is like a lot of Oscar Wilde kind of plays in Niagara. So that was super exciting, and I actually got packages in the mail of the little, I think they were like probably cassettes at the time. I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe CDs. But yeah, that was my first gig, and then I got a few different Toronto ones. But I ended up getting way more work in New York and actually not in Canada. So once things started to get rolling and I did those meetings in New York, it seemed like I would just get more from publications there. Like Rolling Stone was actually one of my first jobs, which
that's
was
a, I mean, that's a
amazing.
Pretty big thing to land, especially early on.
I was really, really excited. And that, like, now people will email you, but they would phone you back then. Mm-hmm. So I'd pick up the phone and it's like, oh, it's so-and-so from Rolling Stone. Would you like to do this job? I'd be like, acting all cool. Like, of course, I do this kind of stuff all the time.
Sure,
no,
let me check my schedule and see if I'm available.
Exactly, exactly.
Meanwhile, you're doing the happy dance in the background since they can't see you.
Yeah, yeah. So that was like the second year when I was out, and that really gave me hope to keep going forward. And it was like lots of ups and downs, and there was like some months where I didn't work and some that were got busier and busier, and it just kind of built upon itself. So yeah, it was exciting.
So during this time, were you seeking out representation, or were you trying to still stay completely independent?
Yeah, independent. Actually, the collective at the time was called Reckless Abandon, which is a very clever name, I know, because we didn't want to have a rep at the time. We just wanted to do it ourselves. At the time, a lot of the reps were taking like 30 or 35% of every job.
That's way too much.
Yeah, I know. It's like more than actors, right? Agents. But yeah, we just thought we'd kind of want to do it ourselves and learn the business side too, and get a feel for that. So, and then things quickly changed with social networking and having everything online too. Like, I graduated in 2001, and things have changed so much since then. And it's just more... It's just a lot of illustrators work for themselves, or they have reps that will do occasional jobs with them rather than kind of taking a percent of every single thing that they do.
Sure.
You know, so it's an interesting time where things are changing.
They're only taking a cut of the stuff that you bring in?
Yeah, or that they bring to you, preferably.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's
what I meant by that. Sorry.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, it would really suck if, hey, I found a job. Great, I'll take 10% or... In the illustration, I'll take 30% of that. You didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, and that
was giving you money.
That was just kind of the contract you signed. Like, they got, even if you did all the legwork yourself, you know, and then you would pay for promotions too. So we're like, well, why don't we just try doing it ourselves and just see how it works out? Even though there was a lot of really great reps at the time, and maybe that would have made things move faster because they had a lot of contacts with the big publications back then.
Sure.
But I think it was a really good way to learn and a good way to kind of support each other in this group.
Gotcha. Definitely. Well, in that process, you mentioned, you know, part of the reason was, you know, wanting to learn the business side of things so you could handle things yourself. What did you learn from that?
Oh, just dealing with contracts together. And we'd always be phoning each other up going, what does this word mean? How do you... and even like there's a really good community... I think there's a good community in illustration in general, but around Toronto of like older, more experienced illustrators helping people out too. And sometimes you could phone them and go, you could help me with this contract and read through it. And also just ways to be like, well, how can you tweak this contract? How can you talk to a client and make a compromise? Or, you know, it's like, oh, well, if you want all of this, then maybe we can extend the deadline, or you can give me some more of the products that I'm illustrating, or just some way to make it more
lucrative.
Yeah, exactly. Different little tricks. And then And then you also just learn, like, oh, well, this art director hired my friend, and his work is maybe similar, so maybe they would hire me too, and so that helps a lot.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Speaking of similar work, during this time, because I think when you're in school, it's hard to define your own style and figure out really who you are and what you want to do. How are you defining your style during this time?
Oh, God, I don't know.
or do you think you figured that out yet?
Oh, no, definitely. I don't even think I've figured it out right now. I feel like it's just constantly changing, which is good. I feel like when things are changing, it's just because you hopefully are interested mm-hmm. in different things that you see all the time. So you're trying to bring that into your work and figure out how to make it more feel like more like you, but still work in the world also.
Sure.
As a commercial product. But yeah, at the time I was working with oil paints. I don't know why I was doing that with illustration, because they would still be wet. And I'd have to make like this foam core frame for them and put them under a heat lamp all night before FedEx would pick them up in the morning and then send them to New York, and then they'd scan everything on a drum scanner there. And then like 2 years after that, everything was just scanned at home. So you never sent anything to anyone, right? So I kind of got tricks, and I didn't burn down my house, which was really good.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's an added bonus, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then I just kind of got into more acrylic, and I kind of kept finding just what I liked about my work and how to do it better with different media. Like I like detail and sharpness, and I was doing everything with a little brush and with acrylic paint. And at some point I said, why don't I try ink? Mm-hmm. Which was obviously suited that so much better. And then I did it, and I'm like, why am I using these other mediums? So it just kind of evolved along the way. Yeah, definitely. And now I mainly use ink. I'll draw everything out by hand, and then I'll scan it. Occasionally I'll add paint to it, but a lot of the time now I'm just scanning it and adding the color digitally. So that's changed also.
Okay. So are you basically drawing out the black and detail work?
Yeah.
By hand still, and then taking that in. Are you digitizing that outline, or are you just taking it straight into like Photoshop?
Yeah, just in Photoshop. Occasionally it's I've had work that's been blown up for like a really big mural or something. So mm-hmm. then I'll get it outlined and But usually I color everything in Photoshop.
I noticed you said you'll get it outlined. Does that mean you're get not it. Doing the actual
outline?
No,
I am doing it. Okay. I'm like the computer. I press the button and it does it. So,
but there's different ways to do it. Like you could literally go through and like take it in and take it into Illustrator and trace every path and do all that stuff. And, I know that your husband's a designer, so I was wondering, are you like recruiting him for that?
I mean, yeah, to be honest, sometimes I do bug him to be like, hey, what are you up to right now?
Hey, Jamie.
Yeah, exactly. Don't you love doing this? Yeah, sure you do. Yeah, so yeah, my style has changed according to the media, but then it's also according to just what I've been excited about at the time, and just keep working on it and bringing in various elements so it feels more and more like you and something that you want to do and that you're excited by.
Sure.
Yeah.
So with that process, and you know, since you are, you know, a lot of the stuff that you're doing is editorial based, you know, how are you finding that balance between your voice and your style within the illustrations and meeting the needs of the editorial copy and the theme of whatever's running through that?
Yeah. I just try to do my best with each assignment to answer the question and relate the idea in a clear manner, but try to throw in stuff that you're excited by. So I was like, sure. I don't know, I'm really into whales right now. Is there any way I could fit one in? But it could even just be color or something small like that, or type, if you're really into type. Sometimes I'll ask the client, like, oh, if you've not actually if you want, I can illustrate the facing page for a sure. little extra money. but try to throw in some things that you're excited about, because I think then that makes the whole image more interesting, because you can tell when someone's actually really into it.
When they care about what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So just trying to fit things in. But I tend to, I think it's also up to you to have work in your portfolio to be more like what kind of work you want to get. So sure. I had a few years ago, I had a lot of work that was, I did a whole bunch of Anna Green Gables covers, and I mm-hmm. tend to get like really pretty looking things. Which I like doing. It was really a fun job. But then your whole portfolio looks like that. So you want to make sure maybe doing personal work that you can have in your portfolio. So when someone comes
so you can switch
you,
it up a little bit and not get bored with what you're doing?
And even if they suggest something, you go, oh, have you seen this kind of thing I've done recently? I've colored it a bit differently. I would like mm-hmm. to try this again. Would you be into that? And usually people are pretty... It's not like too much of a variation for me, so it's not a massive jump, but just trying to push the work that you want to do. When you can, sometimes you can't. Sometimes it just doesn't call for anything that exciting. It just is what it is, and you just make it look nice. Or it's just like a straight portrait. I get a lot of portrait work too, so I can't add the whale into that.
I was about to say, you can't sneak a whale into that.
I'll try.
I mean, I guess you could, but it'd be a little harder.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who so, was it? Al Hirschfeld, who used to sneak his daughter's name into every
girl? Oh, yeah. I know. That's so sweet. It's really nice. yeah, he could probably do what he wants, though, can't he? So good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then doing art shows, I think that really helps. Trying to think, okay, what do I actually want to do that's away from the day-to-day work? Mm-hmm. And which sometimes you don't know until you have that moment where you have a deadline for a show. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. I had this opportunity. I want to really figure out what I'm excited by and get that done. And then sometimes that work will then inform your commercial work, whether it'll be just like a sample you can show an art director with something that you've done differently, or maybe it's slightly, even like slightly different, like line quality that you're drawing with, or a little different mm-hmm. media, something like that. So just to keep moving. I'm just kind of in that mode right now because I've been, I have a three-year-old now, and I was just like, the last few years is just, I've had like a lot of exciting jobs too, but I've had a lot of just basic portrait jobs, which have been great when I've been really busy and tired, sure. just because my brain wasn't working in full capacity when you're not sleeping at all.
I understand.
So now coming out of that, it's like, okay, what do I actually want to do now? And trying to figure out how to push it out there, and then what art directors or creative directors would be interested in that kind of work too. So mm-hmm. I don't just draw pretty Anna Green Gables girls all the time. I have some variety, and I really like science fiction and horror. Like those uh-huh. are kind of my loves, which I don't have shown in my portfolio as much. So it's like how. Just showing more of a different kind of theme and different darker elements. So, and then you can maybe get editorial work that is a little bit more hard hitting and interesting sure. too. So
with that and having that love for horror and all those things, how are you, does that translate into when you have like a gallery show or something like that? Or is that kind of an outlet where you're allowed to do that then?
Yeah.
Or
definitely.
You're allowing yourself.
I'm allowed. Yes. Jamie, my partner and I, we just did an art show that came down last month where we did a collaborative show together. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those opportunities to be like, okay, now we actually have to figure out what we want to do. And it was like science fiction kind of themed, called Drown Worlds, and under this banner like collective name that we might work with called Vermilion Sands. It's like mm-hmm. connected to J.G. Ballard's writing and other different science fiction authors that I like, but just getting like a little sense of this world that these books took place in, rather than being a straight narrative that you would see in a book. So just like a different kind of feeling than I would normally do. And we both started with like different paintings each, because he can he paints too when he has a chance. And then those paints just sat in our rooms because we were too scared to actually paint over them. So we're like, this is not working. And we were like just scared about destroying our marriage. So
yeah, well that's you don't want to do that over a painting.
Yeah, that's not worth it. So we just decided to try doing silk screening, which is really fun, which we hadn't really done that much before. So we both did different screens that we made up ourselves, and then we collaborated with them in the silk screening studio. So that was a really exciting and different way of doing things. And we want to, because there's only so far you can push your portfolio, we really want to try and work on a separate portfolio where we both work together. That would be maybe for art shows like this, but then also for commercial work. So then trying to think about, okay, we really like these pieces we did. How do you make it work for an article for the New York Times or for Economist or for whatever? Sure. Yeah, so that's an interesting little project to get excited about again. I like to have little goals.
So I have two questions for you around that.
Yeah.
A, you mentioned it's called Vermilion Sands. So did you stick with an entire red color palette for that?
No. We should.
That'd be an interesting challenge.
It's like a J.G. Ballard book title. It's like stories by him about this other world. But yeah, that would have been good. And I do actually. We did it all mainly. It was all the line work ended up being mainly in black, rather than adding, because we tend to add a lot of color to things. So that was also an interesting thing to be like, no, we're going to strip it down, and give yourself like those little black box exercises that you have on chef cooking shows. You're like, you only have these ingredients, but it makes you more creative within those boundaries.
Sure.
Right. And it makes sure that you don't get totally overwhelmed by endless possibilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I tend to do a lot.
I completely understand. I do the same thing. And then the other question for you, and I ask this purely out of self-serving interest because my wife is a designer as well. How is that collaboration process for you? How do you, A, keep from driving each other insane, you know, outside of just, you know, the normal joys of, you know, having a partner and driving each other sane in that way, insane in that way, but within your work and all?
Well, we're still figuring it out, but I will get back to you about that. You have like an update. Jamie and Jackie divorced a few months later.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not. It does help that we have separate studios. So I'm on the second floor and Jamie's on the third floor. So we work at home and we're usually working on totally different projects. And then we see each other throughout the day. Usually Jamie like reminds me to eat and brings me cups of tea. So that keeps our marriage going.
That's helpful. That's nice.
But with these collaborative things, we tend to not be working in conjunction. That helps too. So I'll do something and send it to him, and then he'll do something else and send it back. And I think that gives us time to have space to experiment without the other person looking over your shoulder going, oh, you should move that there. You should move this there. Which, I mean, we sometimes do. Especially I do over Jamie's shoulder. He's like, get away. Get back.
Get out of the way. I'll do it.
Yeah. You still have freedom and you still have freedom within that collaboration then.
Sure.
To experiment a little bit without someone else seeing your experiments and judging them. I think that's a big part. You don't want to feel like hemmed in by those judgments all the time.
When you're doing those things, are you discussing up front, you know, kind of what the parameters are, what the goals are, or are you just, hey, this is what it is, and you do what you do, I'll do what I do, and let's see where they meet in the middle and develop something from there?
For the art show, it was like that, definitely. We had an overall idea of the concept of the show and the kind of vibe that we wanted to get. So we were each going for that, but we had separate pieces. We didn't really know how they were going to work together until we were actually silk screening them together. So that was really fun and different, because usually within illustration and design, you have to be more particular and you can't have that play. So right. I think it's really important just to have these different outlets where you can play again. You're like, oh, this is actually fun. You
know? Yeah. I don't know why I nodded vigorously in an audio format either.
Yeah. And he nodded. Yes. But with now trying to work on pieces for the more commercial aspect of that project, it is coming up with at least an idea. So I think we're going to just start with kind of books that we like and go, okay, mm-hmm. if we're going to do this book cover, how would we do it? Mm-hmm. And then work on it separately, doodle out some ideas separately, then come together and see kind of what we like and then work on these separate elements. So still have that separate time.
Sure.
And then work off the what the other person is doing a little bit. And we find it's just really nice to get, like, when, especially when you've been working so long on something, we all have these routines that we do.
Sure.
We'll have, like, even if I try to add a different color, sometimes it ends up looking the same at the end anyway, because you balance everything out, like, a particular uh-huh. way. So I'm kind of hoping just having another person there will, like, push things in a different direction, get you out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. What are you know, other than, you know, collaborating with Jamie, what are some other things you do to put yourself out of your comfort zone?
Just like looking a lot of people's work that I like. I like looking at older illustrators too and different techniques and, mm-hmm. and trying those out, especially with the inking lately, looking at a lot of just people who focus on black and white inking and different techniques they had, that helps a lot, really. Mm-hmm. And then just trying, I think just trying to have a little more free time. Like we just put our kid in an extra day of daycare. So I feel like, oh, okay, now we actually have an extra day to have some space and experiment. And before it was just kind of just survival mode.
Sure.
Right. So you didn't feel like you had the luxury to experiment. You're like, nope. Got to get things yep. done.
Yep. And also, he's like, coming home at 3. We got to be done by 3.
Yeah. And I also, I can't work all night anymore like I used to do.
No.
That's not there's good. No the, way.
There's two factors behind that. Having a kid and getting
aging.
Older.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. So what's good about that in a way, it actually does make you, I think, have to make decisions mm-hmm. and just go for it with things, whereas before I would kind of be a little bit more back and forth and pondering, or maybe spend way too long sketching out ideas. Sometimes you're like, that's good, that works, let's go for it. It just, you don't have the time to do that. But now I would like a little bit more time just to experiment and figure sure. out how these different things work.
Sure. So, you know, kind of backtracking a little bit, you mentioned The Economist, and that made me just think of something. When you're getting something, because The Economist is not known for its lively writing.
Yeah.
When you're getting these editorial pieces that are very just, especially for us creative types, mm-hmm. Not necessarily the most exciting material for us to read and digest. How are you finding ways to breathe life into that?
Will you add the whale? I don't know.
I knew it was going to come back to me.
Yeah. I think that is the challenge. And I think some illustrators are really good at thinking in these interesting concepts. For me, it's not something that comes super easy to do, like, abstract concepts. So
sure.
I think that's kind of why I want to do it, just for the challenge and just to try and get better at it. But you find hopefully maybe Economist is not the greatest sample, but you find like in just the overall idea of an article. So if it's about, you know, stock rates going up, you just focus rather than all like the specifics in the article about like movement going up, mm-hmm. things like that, and just thinking about different ways that you can draw that idea. That's not super cliche, or a fun way that you can flip that cliche on its end.
Sure. You know, yeah. Because I mean, immediately when you said that, the first thought that popped in my head is you get this chart that goes.
Yeah.
Up the hill, and I don't know why I made that. Again, I'm making motions on a, you know,
yeah.
podcast. But it's like half of the, not that I read The Economist, but I have seen things from The Economist. Mm-hmm. And like, well over half of the things that I've seen come out of them have that almost exact same illustration where it's just, it's a chart, it's going up, there's somebody walking up that, you know, the steps of that.
Yeah, thing, but that's what's really interesting when you see illustrators who are really good at that work and really inventive mm-hmm. with ideas. And maybe not particularly in that magazine, but other business kind of money magazines. There's some really, really inventive, creative problem solving there and beautiful images. But it really depends on the overall look of the magazine and if they're willing to take that chance.
Sure.
So, you know, instead of using a ladder, they're using a dragon or something crazy.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
But you do see publications like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gotcha. How are you focusing on that challenge of being more conceptual, since you said that's not your necessarily comfort zone of and biggest strength?
Yeah, I think it's just like giving yourself your own jobs, right? Like, as if that's what I'm trying to do now. If someone gave you an article that was about this, how would you do it? Or even articles that I've got recently just for my regular work, just trying to think about just forcing yourself to do something a little bit different with it. Even if it's not overall hugely different, just finding one little aspect of it that you can change or play with that you haven't before, and maybe taking those baby steps and seeing where they go.
Sure.
But yeah, and it's also kind of a balance of like knowing also trying to know what you're good at and being okay with that and trying to, you know, get better at those aspects and not being so hard on yourself that you can't be like this person or like that person. Taking on new challenges, but also recognizing that, hey, maybe they can't do this thing that you do and you can get better at it. But that's a struggle now because there's just so much good work online. It can be really overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see everyone's failures and you don't see how they're struggling or that they might want to do something that you do really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's just, I find always a balancing act finding, like if I'm way too happy with things and I'm not kind of pushing myself to try something different. Mm-hmm. So you want a little bit of struggle in there, but not so much that you're paralyzing yourself or in tears.
Sure.
You know, and you want to be...
Discomfort can be good, but it can also be overwhelming.
Yeah, and you want to be inspired by people's work, either newer people or older heroes that you have. Mm-hmm. But then maybe don't look at it constantly, then put it away, put Twitter away, put Instagram away, and just focus on like what you do and how to make it better. Mm-hmm. Not try to be that person or constantly compare yourself. So yeah, that's what I go through in a lot of the people that I know too, just that teeter back and forth, you know. And I think as you get older, it happens less and less. You get more confident, definitely, but sure. Still that struggle is always there.
So with pushing yourself, is there, you know, things that you haven't had the opportunity to work on that you would really like to get out of your comfort zone and be able to do?
It's really just subject matter a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Like I would love to do film posters mm-hmm. with some directors I really like, but that have different subject matter, that it's not just super pretty looking work.
So all those sci-fi and horror things that you talked about.
Yeah, exactly. And just, yeah, that kind of thing would be interesting. Maybe more murals. I'm not sure. I'm kind of in this interesting and infuriating area where I'm like just trying to ponder about what the next step is and what I actually want. Because it's nice because when you're younger, it was like, yeah, getting in Rolling Stone was my biggest goal. That was amazing. Sure. And then I got it. And then like, oh, okay, well, what's next? It's just like different, getting excited about trying to get into different publications or working, collaborating. Like a lot of the projects I've really loved to do recently is just collaborating with other creative people that I really love. Mm-hmm. like people who do stuff that I don't do, like really good typographers and writers and things like that. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
And maybe not the guy who's in the office above you.
Yeah, maybe not.
Sorry, Jamie.
Yeah.
So we're getting kind of close to our time here, but what exciting do you have coming up that you are allowed to talk about?
Yeah, well, I have a part of a box set for Planned Parenthood that's coming out actually end of October. The digital files will be released, and mm-hmm. then November, it's a whole box set of 7 inches that is all beautifully packaged together.
For Planned Parenthood.
For Planned Parenthood, just to raise funds, like all the funds go to support them, which is really amazing.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. So it's called 7 inches for Planned Parenthood, which is pretty sassy. And and then everyone just volunteered time. So they had different artists doing artwork for each of the singles. And then they had different musicians. They had people like St. Vincent and John Legend and Bjork, Foo Fighters, I think, like so many different musicians. And then also writers like Margaret Atwood's on it.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, which is incredible. So there's different writers too. And then that all comes out. So it's called 7 inches for Planned Parenthood, and it all goes towards helping fund healthcare, which is really like, it's nice to feel like you can do something when things seem so in disarray lately and you feel kind of useless.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, definitely. And like, I feel really lucky in Canada that we just take for granted a lot of this stuff.
Well, you have Justin Trudeau, who's kind of dreamy and
yeah. You know,
the at least amongst myself and some of my friends is Canada is America done right.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear. We still have some stuff to work on, but overall,
well, everywhere does.
I definitely feel really, really lucky lately. So it is nice and. Just to promote the fact that this stuff should be available to people. Definitely.
Healthcare is important.
And I mean, especially when you're a freelancer. I talk to people in the States, and like before the Affordable Healthcare Act, it's like I don't know how they paid for it all the time. It seems like you just can't be a freelancer because you've got to pay these insane sums each month just in case something happens to your family. It's awful to have that
even
fear.
Even with it, it's ridiculous. I mean, I work for a corporation and they, you know, provide our benefits, but I mean, we still have to pay a portion of it, and I pay like $800 a month.
That is crazy.
I mean, I pay more for my health insurance than I do for my car payment and my mortgage payment combined.
Yeah, it's so upsetting. Yes.
Yeah. So something's not right about that.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And it's not even very good coverage.
Yeah. And just like you wouldn't, like it doesn't promote. I mean, obviously it's just not good to not have people be under this amount of fear all the time. Definitely that they can just be bankrupt so quickly. But in the smallest way, just looking at it from a freelancer, is like, I don't even know how you would be a freelancer and have that freedom. Like the system's just not built that way.
No, it really isn't. I mean, and there's some places throughout the States where you have a little more safety with that. Like there's these outliers like New York City, where you've got like Freelancers Union and Design Guild and all, where you can get stuff through there.
Yeah.
Or you've got like Austin, Texas, where if you're a musician, you get free health insurance.
And nice.
I know there's places in California as well that are like that, like in San Francisco and stuff have things like that. But for the vast majority of the United States, it's not that way.
Yeah. And even like if you have insurance, you don't know exactly what it covers until something happens. Like I just can't imagine that, even if you're lucky enough to be able to afford to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like with us, if something happened to us and we need cancer treatment, you just get it. Like, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. You don't have to make the decision between, well, am I going to go and not pay all of my bills so I can get healthy and
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you don't have to make those choices.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So this was a fun tangent to get off to after talking about design and all that.
but yeah, that is coming up. So that's nice. And yeah, that's about the biggest thing on the horizon now. I have some book covers coming up, which is nice. But yeah, so just trying to figure out things, maintain that excitement, not get paralyzed. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. It's all right now.
And then aside from that, your biggest challenge is hoping that your son will go down for a nap.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Does he nap anymore? He is three. So it's right on that verge.
It is just like this week that he's decided to stop.
Oh, no.
Which I don't know. I don't know if I want to deal with him all day.
But, yeah, no. I mean, my kids are eight and I wish they still would take naps. It would be, yeah. Just so I could have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah, that and be woken up by night terrors at night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Super fun.
Thankfully, those don't happen quite as often, though. But, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always fun. So, we're ending this on fun notes. Night terrors and health insurance.
Yeah.
So, where can people find you online?
I'm at JackieOakley.com. That's JackieOakley.com. And I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at Jackie Oakley.
So, spelled the same way.
Yeah, spelled the same way. That's me.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me this morning. Well, it's afternoon for you now, or it's mm-hmm. just hit it. So.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's been really fun.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So go out and hug some necks.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Bye, Jason.
All right. Bye. You can find out more about Jackie on Twitter at Jackie Oakley. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprints.com and get 20% off orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.